You're very welcome to another episode of the Sideshow Garden podcast. This is part two of two with Joe Thompson and a very special returning guest. If you haven't heard part one with Joe Thompson, go back, not last week, but the week before. Listen to that and come back here, because otherwise this part will make no sense at all. Have you done that? You're back. That's brilliant. Okay. With thanks to London College of Garden Design for their support. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Joe Thompson, part two.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
You're very welcome to another episode of the Sideshow. This is, as I have noted, part two of two with Joe Thompson. Now, what happened whilst myself and Joe were in that very palatial car park in Battersea in London? Palatial, salubrious, I don't know, avant-garde, other words, and sitting on an Ifor Williams trailer, of which I should add I was sent a note to explain to me whose trailer it was, and I should give them a note of thanks. It's Creepers Nursery, as by the way. They're on Twitter as Creepers Kate. I don't know why they picked a Twitter handle like that, but they did. None to the point. I changed the battery midway through, and I did as invariably I do. I got distracted and started talking with Joe about anything and everything, obviously sans microphone, which is why I'm here. One of the upshots, or one of the bonuses of that, is that in part one I realized post my conversation with Joe that she is a little bit how would you say, of possible Irish genetics. Not very good at taking compliments, not very good at all of bigging oneself up, and not really good in that department. No disrespect to her, she is amazing. This is partly the problem, but she's not very good at letting, let's say, you know, something that I do terribly well. So I rang a very good friend of mine, former guest of the show and garden writer nonetheless, Charlie Hart, to I suppose give me a better insight into the woman, the legendary lady. And then we'll proceed to the second part of the episode. I hope that's okay with you. Just bear with me here. Charlie, are you there?
I'm here, Peter.
Charlie, first of all, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm standing more or less exactly where I was standing in my garden when we last spoke. And it is a lovely, lovely morning. I wish I could explain quite how unctuous it is.
Charlie, for those of you at home, as you're well aware, is a former guest of the show, accomplished author and freelance writer, a writer for hire. So go look up Charlie. You can't miss him. Listen to his episode on the Sideshow if you wish. But Charlie, we're going to skip on past you because neither you nor I are as amazing as Joe. Charlie, before we get into talking about Joe, can you just take me from 2009 to present on the list of medals that she has to her name?
Yes, it's an astonishing list, and I will go through it as quickly as I can because it's a long list. 2009 Chelsea Flower Show, Silver Gilt. 2010 Chelsea Flower Show, Gold Medal and Best in Show. 2012 Silver Gilt Medal for the Caravanning Garden. 2013 RHS Chelsea Flower Show, Silver Medal. 2014 Gold Medal. 2015, Silver Gilt. 2016, Gold Medal. 2018, Chelsea Flower Show, Gold Medal. It's a big list.
So essentially, bar 1 year at Chatsworth, which was 17. Sorry, in 2011, I'm being told. But from 9 to 18, that's essentially 10 years of...
Yeah, it's amazing. Unbelievable. Yeah, 10 years consistently. Astonishing.
To put that in context, though, if I do a takedown of a garden the first week of June, if I strip that apart, my submission for Chelsea Flower Show goes in approximately 1 to 2 months later.
Yeah. And as we all know, how much of a year goes into its design, work, planning, thinking, mulling. It's an astonishing record. I mean, all I can say in a sense is I'm glad I haven't had to do that. I'll be honest.
Yeah, well.
Amazing resilience.
Give me just a little bit of a taster, if you can, Charlie, of what Jo has done in her career. And as a garden journalist, I guess, what is your take on how she has done that and kept, as I chatted with her in episode one, so fresh over so many years on the highest stage that you and I both know?
Well, I think, Peter, that it is fair to say, and not an exaggeration really, to say that Jo sits squarely in a great tradition of British garden designers. And that was confirmed again this year. You know, she won a gold medal at Chelsea for the Wedgwood Garden. But she's been doing this, for, as you say, for quite a number of years. And she's one, I think it's fair to say, one of the greats. So it's a stonking achievement and a stonking trajectory.
What type of gardens are we talking about here, Charlie? Because I'm fully aware that in 2018 she won gold with the Wedgwood Garden, and in 2009, that I am aware, it was silver gilt, her first time at Chelsea Flower Show.
Yeah, I think 2012 was the Caravan Garden. Quite a difference, isn't it, between celebrating caravanning on the one hand and Wedgwood on the other. But I think, again, I think that speaks to her versatility as a designer. I mean, I think she can go to all sorts of interesting places and design all sorts of gardens. But I think one of the things that, for me at least, sets her apart is the way in which she seems very often to tie her gardens to a sense of place. So rather than maybe chasing an idea of what's fashionable in terms of planting, she speaks to the environment in which the garden is sited. So, for example, she won the People's Choice at the Chatsworth Flower Show, that new one in 2017, and that, you know, that was a garden that was very tied to its position, its location, and so on and so forth. So, but I think she can be very light, very playful, and as I say, I think she can sit squarely in that British tradition of really brilliant garden designers.
For those of you listening at home, Charlie's line is a little bit come and go. Just bear with us here. He is, as I invariably am when I do telephone interviews, outside in a field. But Charlie, let me just ask you, as a voice, I guess, that I respect, how do you go from doing Wedgwood? For me, that is a brand that needs, I was going to say, no introduction, a little bit like Joe, it is one of the greats. But you then go back a few years and you're looking at, not to harp on about it, but just to contrast between Caravans and Wedgwood. You need to be pretty much on top of your game. It is very much a la that U2 remaining in the charts for the last 30 years because they tend to move and change and then come around full circle. Is that a fair appraisal? Is that a fair point?
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. I think it just speaks to her amazing skill and versatility. I think you're right. They're very different thing, very different gardens to design, but they are, but actually both profoundly interesting in their own ways. I mean, Wedgwood, as you say, needs no introduction, but it's a really interesting brand. Wedgwood, it's a really interesting concept. Josiah Wedgwood, you know, the guy who set it up, their work on slavery early on in the 19th century. They invented a sort of it was amazing propaganda, really, a medallion. That was an anti-slavery medallion that the well-to-do across the country bought. But there's a really rich and vibrant history there. And I think she did reference some of the early colour swabs and so on and so forth for the Wedgwood Garden. But then caravanning is interesting too, isn't it, as a concept? I guess in a way caravanning predates when we became gardeners. It predates that point 12,000 years ago when we started rearing animals and growing plants. And it speaks to a sort of romantic urge within each of us. But as you say, to transform that into a garden is quite another thing. And it's a mark of her extraordinary talent. And I'm sorry that she doesn't blow her own trumpet, but I guess that's to her credit. So I'm very, very happy to blow the proverbial trumpet for her.
Well, I'll take a line from Kate Gold, another former guest of the show, and another one of the greats, who I think Kate noted that she likes to build a garden, she likes to design them, but then she prefers that they speak for themselves and allow others speak about them. One, is that a good trait and a good quality? I gather that is. But on the other hand, have you found, Charlie, that there is shall I call it a Joe Thompson style to a Joe Thompson garden? Am I allowed to even call it that?
I don't know. I that might be asking me to go further than I feel comfortable in a sense, in that I think that her skill and her playfulness, and I think that there's some synergy. There is some echo, perhaps, because of her position in this tradition. I mean, I know, for example, that she's spoken about her love of Sissinghurst, her love of Great Dixter, so on and so forth. So there may be an aspect of that, but I don't think in any way that that limits her versatility or her ability to in a sense, reinterpret that great tradition in a way that is consistent but always fresh. And in a sense, that's what the best architecture does. It speaks an ageless language, but always in a fresh and new way. And I think she's one of the few garden designers, you know, today who has that skill and ability. It's a very hard thing to tie down. I think you either have it or you don't.
Charlie, you mentioned Sissinghurst and
Great Dixter.
What are they, Charlie, for those who may be unaware?
So Sissinghurst is Vita Sackville West's famous and brilliant garden on the south coast, and it is hauntingly romantic. And it makes a special use of roses. It's where there's the famous white garden, a garden based on the colour white, which has been replicated, and people have attempted to copy it all over the shop. But it's a hauntingly romantic place, and well worth a visit if you've ever been. And it does sit squarely in that tradition of British gardening. Great Dixter, on the other hand, was Christopher Lloyd's garden, and is also fabulous and interesting in its own way. He inherited the house, I believe. It was a Lutyens garden originally, but he was bold and he was brave and he changed things. He took out an ancient rose garden and put in an exotic garden instead. He did all sorts of amazing and brilliant things. And it is one of the great gardens, I would say, of the world. Now gardened by Fergus Garrett, who is the head gardener and who, of course, knew Christopher Lloyd, worked with Christopher Lloyd for many years. And it's an astonishingly interesting place and well worth going to. But they both fit squarely in this tradition of British horticulture.
One of the questions I never asked Joe, or I didn't get to ask her, was about her own garden, Charlie.
Well, I know she's on record. I read an article in which she was asked, if you couldn't design your own garden, who would you get to design it? And interestingly, she said Arne Maynard. And I think, firstly, he's a great, great garden designer too. But I think in a way that speaks to the sort of school that she's in and to the sort of gardens that she designs. So I think that speaks for itself. Hopefully I've done she is brilliant, and I hopefully have given enough credit to that.
Well, I think you just hit the nail on the head right there, and I hope that I have as well. For you listening at home, that was the voice of Charlie Hart. He is a former guest of the Sideshow, and when this episode is done, go back and listen to that one. He is a very accomplished writer, author. Fingers crossed he's got another book coming out soon, because I think it's fair to suggest his first one was a little bit a breath of fresh air. And Charlie, it's been a real pleasure to speak with you again.
Peter, it's been a pleasure as always. Thanks for inviting me.
You're most welcome. Thanks so much, Charlie.
Cook. Cheers, Peter. Have a good one.
You too. Take care. Pleasure. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Charlie Hart, very good friend of the Sideshow and all around delightful gentleman. I'm going to leave you or segue into part two with Joe. And we're back in Battersea Park, standing next to the now infamous trailer. It's a little bit windy, but it's worthwhile, I promise you. For anything you need, at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow and Sideshow.com. Enjoy. I had to change a battery on a microphone, and it's got a bit windy in the background, so I apologise for the wind blowing, and I hope this is okay for you listening at home. I don't remember entirely where we were, Joe, but I think we both got distracted. We've got a mutual friend, I'm proud to say, and he's also the reason, well, the place that he works at. That's Andrew Fisher Tomlin and London College of Garden Design. But
they're responsible for putting these series of interviews in a car park in Battersea together, and I couldn't ask to be in the company of a nicer fella, to be quite fair about it. How long do you and Andrew Fisher-Tomlin and London College of Garden Design go back?
Well, we go back to 2009 to Chelsea, where he was the assessor of my garden and came and gave me feedback, and then gave me an opportunity to be at the next year's show, just through him being a trustee of Thrive and introducing me to them. But he's become a firm friend. He's my mentor. I say, he laughs, he gets slightly embarrassed when I say he's my guru, but he is. If there's an issue, even last week I was emailing him about something, just something, and he's a great, he's incredibly supportive, wholehearted, and brilliant teacher. And you're lucky, I didn't go to the college when I was training, because it wasn't around. And
it's phenomenal that they're 10 years old, and I had this conversation with Naomi Ferret-Cohen about Andrew, and that since I recorded his interview, which is more than well worth a listen, we've got really ambient sound effects. I really do hope it's okay for you at home, and I'm not bigging them up, but we spoke while I was changing that battery, which lasted about 10 minutes, and you were saying that you work a lot maybe with London College of Garden Design. Why is that?
Well, because I know that, as far as working with them is concerned, and perhaps, getting work experience students or graduates to come and work with us, of which we have a couple, that I know that the training that the college gives, and this is not, I'm not doing this as an advert, but it's fantastic. What the tutors that they have, the speakers that they have, I look at it and think, oh, I'd quite like to do that course if I had some time. And I think it's realistic, isn't it? It turns out graduates who know that there's a way to go, but that want to learn, because you can't learn everything in a year, but graduates who want to know, who've got a really firm understanding of a lot of really crucial elements. I think that, that's why it works so well with the design, the construction, the business, all those elements of training that you get with them. And I don't think it can be bettered, really. And as I say, I've got a couple of people at the moment who are graduates who are working. When I say at the moment, that sounds a bit scary. No, you're full-time, guys. I couldn't do without them. I think we've talked before about how it is a team effort, but it really is a team effort. I'm one part of that. I might be there waving my hands around saying, oh, I'd really like it to look like this, and then there are other people who are kind of either telling me it can't, why it can't look like that, but it could look like this. They're not just realizing my design ideas, so they're not just they're not just using Vectorworks and as I said, visualizing my words. They have design input, and I respect that, because everybody's got knowledge that you haven't got. And we're currently working on things at the moment where there are mood boards that everybody is contributing to. I'll lead it, I'll steer it, but I'm also very happy to hear if there's a better idea.
I find it quite fascinating when I talked to Will Williams yesterday. I had the pleasure of chatting with, and I'll speak to Will in a couple of days' time, or weeks as far as you're concerned, listening at home. When I look at what my horticulture education in college was, and when I look at what he's doing and has done with LCGD, I have to think about that one always. It's streets ahead, and it's like when I look back on 1980s or even prior to that, television programs on gardening where one man with a woolly jumper and a potting shed esque style is showing you how to countersink a paving slab into your lawn and put up a sheet of trellis and put a clematis up against it, and then all of a sudden it transforms into, well, we've got three story gardens and gardens that we go below ground level, and it's like rocket sciences versus paper aeroplanes. Maybe I'm over jesting that or suggesting that, but I find that what he was bringing to the table, even by conversation, add, and I don't think I've met a series of graduates like it, but a consistent series of graduates, is it that they don't draw what they're told to draw, but they will turn around and go, Joe, can I ask you if we did it this way and this way? Does that happen?
Yeah, I think creativity is a huge element of, you know, I need whoever I take on to work with me, you know, has to be creative. You can be as brilliant as you like with, as I say, you know, with CAD or with Photoshop or whatever, but you've got to have the ideas in the first place. I think anybody who works, you know, comes and joins our team needs to have that element of creativity and that confidence. And I think the graduates are confident, and also they're confident in their ability to say that they don't, you know, that they don't know how to do something. And then again, you know, I can teach. We've got stuff to offer them. But creativity is underrated, and you need it.
But that drive and creativity is something I think you can instill it into. There's a wasp flying around there. He's okay. I don't think you can teach somebody how to have a creative, like Robin Williams or an Andy Kaufman, kind of a streak about them. I think you're either born a little bit with 1% missing out of the cake, or we're both laughing, or you're not. And on one hand, and then on the other hand, I think people look at, what was I talking about of recent, of if you're doing like a work experience in a nursery and you're only weeding pots, and some will say, well, I've only been weeding pots for 3 weeks, and I will say, well, how many plants per square meter does a 3 liter pot take up? And if you walk through that polythene tunnel by pace, how many approximate plants are in there, how many liters of compost, how many of them can you fit into the back of a van, just by looking instinctively? And then take that into the Kaufman, Robin Williams type-esque, off the charts, slightly imbalanced view of life, which I absolutely adore. And that's the bit that I don't think you can get up.
No, I agree. I think you can't teach that. It's got to be there within a person, but you would hope that, you know, people taking on that course have that element. Maybe, you know, I'm not saying that everybody does, but I like the idea of 1% of the cake missing. I think we might have been accused of that in the past. Things are done differently.
I'm going to possibly insult myself here, but I phoned somebody last week. They said, oh, hello, and I said, oh, hi, it's Peter, and they said, no, we know who you are, and they just started laughing. And I said, what are you laughing at? And they said, well, we always giggle when you phone. And I didn't entirely understand why. They never answered me. I'm still none to the wiser. When we speak on one hand about having, we mentioned it earlier on, or touching it earlier on, about having a Joe Thompson garden, I get why you might go rosy-cheeked maybe if that's suggested, but if there's that 1% missing about it, then I can appreciate why they would say it. Do you think you have that little bit of the pie is gone? It's a terrible analogy, I know, but it gets it there.
Oh, well, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I, of course, think of myself as completely normal, but it's just when my mother sent me a card a few years ago saying, you know, it was quite extraordinary, just said on the front, once you know we're all mad, everything makes sense. And once you know everybody's mad, it all makes sense, something like that. And I just thought, I rang her and said, what do you mean? And she said, well, that's you. And I thought, well, okay, maybe, I don't know. Apparently I go about things in different ways. Apparently I have a different world view, but I don't know. I'm not quite sure I should be talking about this because it makes it sound like I'm a fruitcake. I think it's just, yeah, if we were all the same, then all the, for example, all our the results of our creative process would be the same. And maybe that's why, I don't know, maybe, I've never really thought about this before, but, you know, maybe all our, the way I do things and the reason our gardens are all different is because I go about things in slightly a different way. So I don't know if that's because there's that element, that one bit kind of extra, or I don't know. Missing is a sort of interesting word, isn't it? It's a sort of, but yeah, just do things differently.
Got a call from some friends of mine a couple of years ago, and your phone's hopping, but I won't read what it says.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. You're more popular than me. Yeah. I should put in some interval music or some Beyonce backup dancers. They managed a music festival and they asked me would I come and give a garden talk. And so I did. If you meet me having a pint of Guinness, I'll tell you that story another day. But the quote that she sent me when I sent her text back saying, how come you asked me? She said, if you're offered a seat on a rocket ship, don't ask what seat, just get on. Do you take oddball, different off the charts things for no apparent reason just because they're a bit different?
Yeah, and that's why I've ended up doing Chelsea nearly every year for the last, well, every year for the last 10 years, because each year we say, right, no, we're going to stop next year. And then something comes along which is different. Something comes along which is a challenge, a completely different brief and a risk. And you think, well, where better to try that out in the public arena where you're going to be scrutinised and, you know, put up for you know, examination almost and possibly humiliated worldwide. I mean, you know, why do that? So, yeah, I think I must like that risk. I think I'm never going to run a marathon, so maybe that's my marathon. Yeah. You know, I think, I mean, some people say, oh, there's a formula, and if you design to that formula, you get a gold. I don't think so. I think, you know, it is very hard to get a gold medal, and great. I think that devalues some brilliant gardens by brilliant designers. However, there is a, you know, there is a safe way of doing things, and there is a, you know, sometimes you might try and do something quite stupid, but you're not thinking about, well, I think I try to do stupid things. I'm not thinking about that gold medal at that moment. What I'm thinking is, will this be something that will look okay, will give somebody something to talk about that the sponsor will like? Then we look at it and think, okay, so how can we make this be the best possible thing it can be? It would be great if it got a gold medal. It would be brilliant. But we know, you know, I can't predict it. I can't ever predict it. And gardens that I think that I've done that we've thought were quite good haven't got gold medals. Some gardens that I've made where I've been a bit like, have surprisingly got a gold medal. So I can never call it. I'm the worst person to, you know, to predict that. So the short answer is no, we don't design it that way around. I don't design it that way around. I'll come up with an idea and hopefully it'll be okay. And I won't get humiliated in public too much.
If I was to ask you, pick one Joe Thompson album record cover, that is one photograph of one garden.
Do you know what it is? And it's a stupid one. This is where I do myself a disservice. It should be some lovely, you know, as I said, great big country garden somewhere or anything. And actually some things that I would choose, I can't really talk about anyway. But so I suppose public garden, therefore Chelsea, I suppose. What I'm thinking of is that I did a garden with a caravan in it in 2012 for the Caravan Club, whose brief to me was to make caravanning popular, which is either no offense to anybody who's got a caravan. I did then invest in a tiny little one of my own for a bit, but just that sort of little vintage caravan in a corner with a little, you know, caravan shaped dog kennel. I mean, it was ridiculous, but it was fun. And I suppose that was not a gold medal winner, but it sort of summed up what we do. You know, I take that brief or listen to the client and go, okay, well, let's run with that. This is fun. This is interesting. I don't know that I'm necessarily going to change the reputation of caravanning throughout the world, but it'd be a jolly good opportunity to put something really fun into a corner of a garden and just make it a fun garden. And actually a few people do, you know, the people say if there's anything they remember, it's probably that garden.
Joe Thompson, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Lovely to see you.
Always lovely to see you. If you listen at home, Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow.com. Thanks for listening. Sorry about the wind, the leaves rustling and all the ambient sounds of sound effects that we paid the crew to come in and make happen behind the scenes. And thanks to London College Garden Design for making this one happen. Cheers, lads. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.